Traveling the Vortex.
We join the Doctor as he travels the Vortex, episode 582. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How's it going, guys?
So far, so good. It's been one of those weeks. It's just been kind of low-key for me. Nothing really exciting happening.
Are you having a staycation?
No, I've been working. Holly was off today. She's off today, tomorrow and Friday.
Is she going to Spain?
No.
That's where they always go when they're on holiday.
I'm sure she'd like to, but it's not in the cards right now. No, but I did get another Oscar Best Picture watched.
Oh, what'd you watch?
Oh, I watched Poor Things, which, unfortunately, this was the one film of all of these I was most excited to watch. And of all of the films on this list that I've seen, Ed is the worst one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Completely disagree.
It is. It's what it has going for it, and I appreciate about it, is the fact that it is the first really original idea that I've seen come out of Hollywood in a long time. However, it is very...
Also completely disagree.
It is very, very dull and boring and plotting, and there's not a lot going on, and no one is very interesting except for the lead character of Emma Stone. And she does a good job, but I have no sympathy for any of the characters in the whole story.
That I can mostly agree with, I think.
Visually, it's very, very stunning. So visually, it's stunning. Again, I commend it for having an original idea. But yeah, I didn't enjoy it. I didn't hate it, but it was very dull.
That's really interesting, since it has so many shades of Frankenstein. I genuinely thought you'd be all over it.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. It really kind of turns the whole Frankenstein thing on its head, which I appreciate the concept, but Frankenstein, the book, is a much more interesting story. And you actually have some sympathy for the monster, but in this one, you don't have any sympathy for any characters. They're just kind of going through life, and she's going through life just learning, and it's just not good. I think that's the only thing I watched. Did you guys get anything watched or read?
We watched Poor Things, and Mel and I both thought it was pretty amazing. Not only in all the technical aspects as far as cinematography and production design, etc., because it's just at least the segments that are in color, it is a very vibrant film. But chunks of it are in black and white, and it's still very striking with the look of it. But we laughed, were shocked and dismayed, and all of the roller coaster stuff. So we really, really, really liked it. We also, I'm actually only one short now. I still haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, but we got to knock out Zone of Interest, which is the Nazi one. that's a thing that happened. It's one of those that it's a good movie, but it's an incredibly uncomfortable one to watch for obvious reasons. But it's kind of just dealing with how unfortunately adaptable humanity is. So you can live next door to Auschwitz and yet still tune it out and be kind of oblivious to what's going on the other side of the wall. Despite the fact that the sound design is insane, there is a nonstop drone that kind of runs through the picture. Trains in the distance, the occasional sound of gunfire, and they just kind of go on like la 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 la, nothing's happening, and it's just horrifying. Not a feel good picture.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah. Keith, you get anything knocked out?
I watched Godzilla versus King Kong. I don't think it's the best of them by any stretch. I still think Kong Skull Island is probably my favorite and the best, or one of the best of the MonsterVerse. But I thought it was pretty good. It was better than King of the Monsters, although I still feel like it kind of contradicts the a lot of what happens in Monarch, especially the time dilation that happens in the Hollow Earth, doesn't quite work the same way anymore in Godzilla vs. Kong. So that kind of creates a contradiction. But
I bet they fix that.
I'm sure they'll figure out a way to.
Because I'm sure somewhere in season 3, some writer will go, oh, we better fix that.
I mean, but seeing it, I'm excited to see how kind of, especially considering how Monarch ends, you know, on Skull Island, and spoilers, at their base, I kind of look forward to seeing how they connect the dots to that, because, you know, we don't know anything of what's really developed for Kong in the interim between the two. So the fact that it's this big jump and this change of, you know, what his life has been like, I thought was an intriguing idea.
Yeah.
It felt like they were trying to connect to previous movies a little, I don't know, maybe too much. I felt like Millie Bobby Brown's storyline was kind of not necessarily pointless, but a little bit pointless. Other than introducing Mechagodzilla, that was the only reason her storyline exists, is to get Mechagodzilla there, which by the time it showed up, I just wouldn't have been surprised. Oh, look, a giant Mechagodzilla shows up. Okay, why not?
I agree. As much as they did with the kids and those characters and the this and the that, and I was like, oh, come on, I'm getting to the point where I don't really care. But I've always felt that way, is that you put a human in a monster movie, I'm rooting for them to get stepped on or eaten, because I came for the monsters. So it was just like, oh, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And then we got down into the base, and there was this big robot skull thing, and I went, oh! So the fact that they were used solely to introduce Mechagodzilla to this thing, I was quite okay with. It was like, I will take that, because you gave us this.
Well, and they had the other humans that were following Kong, which had the little girl which connected with Kong and actually has a personal connection to the monster. And that's mm-hmm. a much more interesting story and makes you care about that kid as opposed to Millie Bobby Brown and the kid from Deadpool 2
yeah.
for no reason.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah. They're still very flawed movies, but it's so much fun watching the monsters fight that it's, you give them a pass. And then I finished reading Antimatter Blues, which is the sequel to Mickey 7. And if you remember, I kind of complained that Mickey 7 kind of had a lackluster ending. Well, this kind of extends that ending and gives it overall a better ending, but still leaves you enough that if he wanted to write a third book, he could. Which I kind of hope he does, because I've enjoyed the character so much, and where they left things leaves it so he could tell a completely different brand new story, which I think would be a really clever way to go about things. But I highly recommend the both. If you're going to read one, I would plan on committing to both of them, because it's worth it.
I'm about 3/4 of the way through Armada, since the library confiscated my Dresden book. And I had to switch back over, but I'm enjoying it so far.
I did watch something else. I watched Inspector Clouseau with Adam. No, not Adam. Alan Arkin stepping into the role of Inspector Clouseau. I didn't realize until about a few years back that actually counted as a Pink Panther film. It's not a good Pink Panther film. It is the worst Pink Panther film. But I've had a heck of a time getting a hold of it and had never seen it. And so finally when Sean, you had it available on your Plex server, I was like, yay, finally I can watch this. So not good.
Well, that's an old one.
Not a good one. Yeah,
I didn't realize it was that old.
Oh, yeah, 1965,
66. That seems something.
In fact, that was...
Because
that was what the third series. Yeah. what was that, the third film? Because the first one was Pink Panther, second was a Shot in the Dark, and then Inspector Clouseau, and then, and then Sellers came back for Return.
But considering you've got, like, Son of the Pink Panther and Curse.
Yeah, which are also not very good Pink Panther movies, but this one sets the bar very, very low, and so comparatively... Comparatively, those are pretty good. Actually, I think I like Curse better than Trail. No, wait. Trail's the one with Roger Moore. Yeah, no, I liked Trail better than Curse. Yeah.
Because Trail is the clip show, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the American detective trying to track down Clouseau. And that's actually, I guess... Roger Moore would be the third person to play Inspector Clouseau. Well, fourth, I guess, if you count the Steve Martin films.
Coming up on James Bond levels of actors.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could tell MGM was trying to do the same thing with their Pink Panther films that they were doing with their Bond films. In fact, they get more spy gadgety as the series goes on.
And they even went and got a Bond.
Yeah, exactly.
They all say, who is Doctor?
This is Tim Treloar.
This is David J. Howe.
I'm Peter Purvis.
I am Sadie Miller.
This is Lauren Cornelius.
Larry, it's Fraser.
For all things in the Doctor Who collecting world and beyond, the Doctor Who Collectors Podcast. I'm Larry Van Mersbergen, your host, and I've been collecting for 42 years. You're listening to Traveling the Vortex on the Direction Point Podcast Network.
We are going on a journey, a very long journey, through the world of the Target novelizations in publication order. Every week, we are looking at a new book, talking about Terrence Dix, Malcolm Hulk, and all our Doctor Who novelization friends. Whatever you do, keep turning the pages. This is Jason Miller of the Doctor Who Literature Podcast, a member of the Direction Point Podcast Network, and you are listening to Traveling the Vortex, a Direction Point podcast.
Well, we don't have any news this week. Now it's discussion panel time! We're doing Dreamcasting the Doctor and Companion, where we're going to be discussing our picks for who we think would make an excellent Doctor or Companion.
Sean, and what brought this up is there's a very famous meme, leastwise I think it's very famous because I keep seeing it, that says, you know, what if Doctor Who was an American show? And then they kind of go back through all of the previous Doctors and cast an American actor as the first Doctor, the second Doctor, et cetera. And I didn't want to do that per se.
Because those picks were horrible. Those picks were terrible.
I also picked all Brits.
Yeah.
Yes.
As you should.
And I want you guys to feel free, like, you don't even necessarily have to as the specific Doc, we don't necessarily have to recast the first Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Just in general,
right?
Who would be a good Doctor? Who has characteristics that you think would, be fun to watch? Or, you know, now if you want to, you know, because there's similarities with this or that, then, you know, sure, go ahead and mention them. But Keith, you said you've got a list already.
Well, I just jotted down a few names. I more looked at it as a who could be a good next Doctor after Shuti Gatwa.
Ah, and who's on your list? Or who's your first one? Just read one of them off.
Well, it depends on how we want to go about it. I kind of steered away from white dudes.
Fair.
Tried to focus on minorities and females specifically. I think the highest end on my list would be Erin Kellyman.
You're going to have to help me out.
Infest Nest in Solo.
Okay.
And Carly Morgenthau in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think she would be very good and bring kind of an alienness to her doctor.
That's an interesting choice.
She, in interviews, has talked about how she wants to play BA women in action roles. So I think the doctor would be kind of not necessarily too far of a step, but enough of a step away from that sort of typecast that it'd fall in line, but let her do some almost pacifism type action as well.
It's a really interesting, I don't want to say casting against type, because she's almost always played very strong, militant women. But because of her stature, because she's a little on the short side, okay. I think that it would be like almost a Troughton. Okay, not necessarily the clown, but that she'd have to bring this very disarming personality in, because people would continually be underestimating her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd turn around and whammy them with the smackdown. That's an interesting choice. Glenn, do you have anybody in mind?
Oh, I got a lot in mind. I got a list myself. Top of my list would be, and I think I've said this many, many times before on this show, but top of my list, obviously, even though he's already been in an episode of Doctor Who, finally, I think Stephen Fry would be an excellent doctor. I think he brings sort of the same gravitas to the role that like a Pertwee or maybe even a McGann kind of brings to it. Can also not completely take himself too seriously in the role, which I think sometimes is necessary in the role of the Doctor. But I think he's just sophisticated enough that he's distanced himself from his comedy roots enough that I think he would be accepted as in the role. He's kind of slipped into more of the intellectual role in his older age, still keeping his wit about him. But I think that he just carries himself in such a way that I think he has a lot of Doctor-like qualities.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I think he would be a good choice as well.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Sean? Well,
I'm going to completely blow your minds with this one. And I will preface this by saying I was much, 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 much younger when this individual first sprang to mind. And it's kind of solely based on the look. Okay? He's a little too old now. Rod Stewart.
Okay.
Crickets.
Well, I'm trying to think of anything I've seen him in that he's acted in, but I can't.
I don't know that I have anything other than his music videos. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he has a look that I think you could pull off, but not knowing anything about his talent as far as an actor, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, no, like I said, I was a youngster when that first popped into my head. But he had the very big Tina Turner Capaldi hair, the season three mm-hmm. Capaldi hair,
mm-hmm.
and frequently in his music videos is wearing almost outlandish doctor like costumes. And I kind of thought to myself, I could see this. He also has he's got kind of a Pertwee vibe for me.
Mm-hmm.
I could see a Pertwee vibe for sure.
Yeah, I have no idea if he can act. I've seen him in concert. I don't know if he can act or not. So that's my very, very unconventional choice. But my standard choice, I still kind of go back to it off of the success, or at least I thought it was a success, even though it only lasted the one season, of his appearance in Dirk Gently, would be Stephen McGann.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's just got the right mix of kind of wit and witticism in my mind to play a very fast pace, especially now with the pacing that the current series has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you would have been a really good Moffat Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He definitely would have fit into that time frame. very well.
Back around to you, Keith.
Another one I thought of was Tom Ellis.
Okay.
Oh, Lucifer?
Lucifer, yeah. He's got the charm that the Doctor often has. He would almost have that look about him that would disarm based off of his looks, and then he'd, you know, dazzle them with his intelligence, and then just walk away, swagger away with whatever he's gotten away with. He almost, it would be a doctor that wouldn't have to have a psychic paper because he had enough charm that he could get away with whatever he wanted.
Mm. Okay. Unfortunately, I don't know enough of his body work either, but I am at least familiar.
Really, only what I've seen is Lucifer, and from what I saw, he had enough range in that alone that I thought he would do a good job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would agree. I think he'd be an interesting choice.
Well, my next one is Jack Whitehall, who was in the first season of Good Omens. And then he's also was just recent, I think more recently, in played Emily Blunt's brother in the Jungle Cruise film with The Rock. I think more in the vein of probably a Matt Smith or a David Tennant. He is a younger actor. He's got a lot more energy. Again, I think kind of that witty comedy edge that could bring some fun to the Doctor. I think even maybe sort of in the style of how kind of Shooty's playing the Doctor with a little more of a light tone. And just, you know, I've known Jack Whitehall more from panel shows over the years that I've seen him on, because he started out as a British comedian, but I think he's really kind of proven that he's a really solid actor as well, especially in the two works that I mentioned.
I've not seen him in anything.
I'll say one more time.
Well, you watched Good Omens.
Well, other than Good Omens, I don't remember him from Good Omens at all. I'm looking at pictures of him.
He was the guy, I can't remember the character's name, but he's the guy that's kind of falling in love with Agnes. Or not Agnes, the witch. Agnes is the writer of the book, but her ancestor.
Oh, okay. That seems more familiar now. Really, looking at his IMDb, I just remember him from the trailers for Clifford.
Oh, yeah. I forgot he's in Clifford.
Okay, Clifford the Big Red Dog or Clifford the Marshall George?
The Big Red Dog.
The live-action Big Red Dog version.
Okay, hang on. I gotta look this up. Hold on. I'm drawing a complete blank. I do not know this individual, I don't think.
You've definitely seen the first season of Good Omens, so...
I've also seen Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Oh, he's the dad in the Clifford.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I found the picture of him in Good Omens. I remember him now.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he would be good.
What's his name again?
Jack Whitehall.
Oh, okay. Yes. Sorry, had to see the connection in order to make...
especially in the Good Omens look of him.
Yeah.
Okay. For sure.
I'm with you now. All right. Yeah, I can get behind that.
He's a little more posh and British in... I don't guess you guys haven't seen Jungle Cruise, but he's a little more posh and British in that. And so I think...
Oh, he's the brother.
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay.
So if you can...
You said that, I kept going...
Well, now that you're picturing him, it's probably bringing back that recall. Yeah. No, he's a little more... I mean, he's still kind of goofballish, but he's a little more posh. And so I think that bringing that kind of side to it with a little bit of the silliness and humor, I think would be kind of fun. What are the next one, well, Sean?
Speaking of goofball brothers in adventure settings, John Hannah, who, probably is best known as, Evie's brother in the Brendan Fraser Mummy film.
Okay. That took me a minute to remember who that was. Yeah.
I can see a younger version of him. Yeah.
in, well,
yeah, again, he's probably a little older now.
I don't know. I think it probably younger, he would have been kind of more of a, maybe a Matt Smith or Tennant type, but I think now he'd be more of a Capaldi type.
Very Capaldi type.
Yeah.
Based it's off interesting of because, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Not even just look, but yeah, it just mannerisms and the way he kind of carries himself.
It's interesting because as a he was kind of one of those as a younger actor that I thought he'd make a good companion. You know, he's kind of a Steven type almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now that he is older, well, maybe he would be a good doctor. You know, I just, mm-hmm. you kind of go both ways with that one. But
yeah, yeah. Sure.
Keith, you got another one?
Hayley Atwell.
Oh.
She's good in everything. So I think her as a doctor would be just icing on the cake. And she's just great. There's not a thing I've seen her in that I've not liked her.
I kind of have to agree. And not even so much the Peggy Carter that she plays, but more recently she was in the latest Mission Impossible film, where she's playing a little bit more of a, well, she's a pickpocket that's kind of got in over her head, and she's a bit naive, but she's also very clever. And I think that bringing that sort of style to the role would make it kind of interesting because it would be a bit of a departure from Jodie's, you know, if you're going from a female perspective, it would be a bit of a departure from Jodie's kind of, you know, bouncy schoolgirl approach and wide-eyed wonder kind of thing. And would be a little more, maybe even not quite sure of herself if, you know, playing it that way, maybe kind of rediscovering, you know, herself throughout the process. I think might be kind of fun if she could take it that way.
That is an interesting choice. Yeah. I think Hayley'd be great. She definitely listening to her in the What Ifs show. You know, she commands the gravitas, you know, for the big dramatic moments. And I could see her yelling at Daleks just as easily as she does Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. She'd definitely be more of an action doctor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's certainly true. My next one is more on look alone than maybe performance, because I think that this next actor is a little bit of a hilarious individual, very good at the deadpan delivery that he does, but it's very kind of one trick, and I'm not sure he would bring anything different than that to the doctor. But and a lot of people have said this, Richard Iowati, I think, just based on look alone, he's got such an eccentric look. I think it would be kind of fun to see him in the role.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it would give him a chance to show that he could do more than the generic deadpan comedy. He's done that. He's done other stuff. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
But so I'm sure he can do it. It just would be further evidence that he could, I think.
I really think though he would fall into kind of the Maurice Moss character from the IT Crowd, that kind of socially awkward individual. I think he would fall into that as that would be his portrayal of the Doctor. I wouldn't want to see that. I'd kind of want to see him do something a little different. And I am like you. I've heard that he's done other things, but you know, as far as acting goes, the only thing I've seen him in is the IT Crowd in that stupid Neighborhood Watch movie. I can't remember. The Watch, I think, is what it was called.
I didn't even watch that.
Oh, it was terrible. He was the best part of it. But then again, he was basically playing Moss on that as well. Everything else that I've ever seen him in has been, you know, as a presenter or a host or, you know, on a panel. So.
Yeah, I've seen other movies that I've seen, but I don't remember really his performance in them. I'm sure I was pleased that he was in Paddington 2, but I don't remember him from it.
Oh, was he? Okay, I didn't realize it.
Although, whatever his part in Black Mirror was, I'm sure was nothing like Moss.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. You know what? Now that you say that, I have seen a clip from that, of him in that. It is very, very different. Yeah.
And he was in Mandalorian.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The voice of
Zero. Another voice in that Although, one, too.
That's not too far.
No.
Which Black Mirror was he in? Do you have the episode?
It does not. Hold on. Locke Henry.
Oh, yeah.
He was his own actual voice.
Okay, yeah. That's one of the shows that's in rotation for one of the TV groups that we have. And the person who had suggested it had seen all of Black Mirror except for the new season. So we actually started with the latest season and then have been working our way backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Since, you know, it's serialized, it doesn't matter which order you watch them in. But
yeah,
that was an interesting episode. Well, for my last Doctor, I kind of went with the acting firepower. This is, I think, one of those that he probably is actually on the list, and the producers are going, we know we won't get him, but, you know, we've got him there. And I'm going to brutalize the pronunciation, even though I'm phonetically saying this. Chiwetel
Ejiofor.
Chiwetel.
That's not how you say his last name.
You're going to have to help me with him.
My apologies, sir.
Chiwetel Ejiofor. I think that's how you say it.
Thank you, Keith.
He was the operative in Serenity, which is where I always think of him from initially. And then he was also Baron Mordo in Doctor Strange.
He married Keira Knightley in Love Actually.
Yep.
Okay. Scar in The Lion King.
Yes.
And we don't talk about that one.
He was great in that part.
That's true. He was great.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
And, you know, probably best known for that one that won the Oscar, that 12 Years a Slave. You know, he's pretty good in that, too.
Yeah, right. There is that one.
But, no, he's got... When I think of him as the Doctor, I think he's almost... I don't want to say dour like Eccleston, but he's certainly not a manic Matt Smith style.
No. A little more somber. Or David Tennant. A little more somber character.
Yeah. But he still has that hint of a smile, that kind of very wry humor that I think would play well. With his overall personality, I think he'd be a really interesting and fun one to watch.
Yeah, he would be good.
Any other Doctors, or do we want to move into companion mode?
Well, one that's already played the Doctor, but I also think would be interesting to see him as a companion. So I'll bring that one up when it comes back around to me.
Okay.
One I think that would be a good Doctor is Dev Patel. He would kind of bring that Matt Smith high energy to the role. But especially with his later roles of, you know, just from the trailer of Monkey Man and the action he can do there. And then the emotion he can do from, you know, what I've seen in The Newsroom and other roles he's done. I think he would be a really strong, solid choice as the Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's one I would have never considered, but yeah, I think you're right.
I agree.
And I've got one more that I think would be a good Doctor. It is Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Oh, she was on my list too.
She would bring a great alienness to the Doctor, bringing sort of that aspect back to the character, and then the humor as well.
I mean, and... Especially especially on the heels of her performance in that latest Indiana Jones movie. That, in fact, the way she plays the character is exactly how I think she should play the Doctor. Exactly the same way. That same energy and kind of a little bit flippant about some things, but serious about others. I thought that was, I think that would be, yeah, I agree. That's a well-casted Doctor.
Really, that's who should probably be the next Doctor.
Yeah. She's probably gotten a little too much, our last guy. I think she's probably gotten a little too much star power now that may not take potentially. That kind of role. Yeah.
But I think
might. She's distanced enough also from Fleabag, because that was such a, you know, I don't want to say controversial, but, you know, MA type role, that now that she's further away, the BBC would maybe be more considerate to choosing her as that role.
Yeah.
If her star power isn't so much that she wouldn't do it. I don't know.
But also,
looking at her IMDb, it's not like, yeah, she did the Indiana Jones, but there's not been a whole lot of other productions that are high level
That's true. Yeah.
His Dark Materials. I mean, she did Staged. An episode of Staged, and you know, there's not a whole lot other. And when she does pop up in Hollywood, it's a big role, like Solo or Indiana Jones, but it's fairly, I'm not sure really what she's been up to, considering looking at her IMDb, because it's not been very active as much as I would think she would be. Which is good, but for as good as she is, she should be working more.
I wonder if there's any connections there with Disney. Read somewhere that her name had been tossed around at one point?
I think her name was tossed around back when they were discussing for Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah, she's been on some lists of actors that should play the Doctor.
And now that she has been in both Star Wars and Indy, which are both Disney properties, there's, you know, there's an in, certainly.
Yeah, right.
Although I'm still more inclined to look at, you know, Bad Wolf Productions than Disney Productions for the next person that's going to be the role.
I suppose there's that.
Well, I'm going to do a twofer, because I'm going to turn it on its head a little bit too, because my two that I think a lot of people think, and number one, my first is Rowan Atkins. I think that even though he's played the Doctor in comic relief, I think that he would make a very interesting Doctor. And
he was very good.
I will say the same thing about Eric Idle. I think Eric Idle is another one of those, one that's been on Dreamcast for years and years and years as a incarnation of the Doctor. However, I'm going to take it one step further. I would rather see both of these actors as a companion to a Doctor. I think that they would kind of take, I think especially Eric Idle would sort of take more of that Dan perspective, but I think he would even drive the humor a little further. And I don't think that he would have to be, you know, go silly. I don't think he has to go Python, but I think that he has kind of that quick-witted humor that I think would serve as a companion and be able to play off maybe a more serious Doctor. We've had those Doctors, Tennant and Smith, and even Capaldi to a point, but Capaldi's more of the in line of who I think he should play against. But having a more serious Doctor and having Eric Idle, or even, you know, like I say, Rowan Atkin, be, you know, kind of play off them with some of the humor and give the humorous side to the more of the humor to the companion rather than the Doctor. I think that might be kind of fun. Maybe bring both of them on board same time.
Yeah. That may be the two to give them together.
That may be too much of the same, I guess, there maybe.
That would be a really interesting Team TARDIS.
Yeah.
You'd almost have to balance them out.
How about a Hallie Atwell as the Doctor and Rowan Atkins and Eric Idle as the companions?
I like it.
I could work with this.
She'd be very good at being able to sort of play that part where she's very, you know, kind of putting up with them to a certain point, but then when it gets a little too silly or a little too, you know, off the rails, being able to also kind of put them back down or knock them down a level. I think she could handle that. I think that, I think that pairing actually would be really, really good. I think the dynamic would be really good.
Okay, so do we now get a pseudo sequel to City of Death, where the TARDIS lands in an art museum and John Cleese is there admiring it, and Eric Idle runs out and they stop and they look at each other for just a moment, and then there's no time, we've got to continue on with what we're doing.
That would be fun.
If you need our phone number, Disney, you can reach us at the end of the podcast.
Is, oh gosh, I can't remember the other actress that was there. Eleanor Braun. Is she still around?
I don't know.
Can't remember if she's passed away.
Needs to be.
That would be more of a you question, if anything.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember if she's passed. Off to IMDb. Actually, I'm going to Wiki, but.
But
let's see.
But just anybody can edit.
She is still alive. She is 85 years old.
Oh, well, there we go.
And it says years active, 1959 to present. So apparently she is still doing some acting in some capacity. I guess her last, looks like her last filmography entry is 2014, but that's only 10 years ago.
Egads. That's a depressing thought. 2014, 10 years ago. What? That's still the future talking.
Right, right.
Well, for my first companion, I'm definitely going to go more powerhouse, because you guys know how I love the idea of an older companion to pair up with the Doctor. And I don't necessarily think of this actor as old, but he is certainly older than... who's been traveling with us of late. And that's Jeffrey Wright.
Oh, okay. Going American.
It's going with an American. Star of the nominated American Fiction. And a wonderful voice of the Watcher. And, mm-hmm. You know, Felix Leiter.
Commissioner Gordon.
Bond films. Commissioner Gordon on the Bat series. Batman. I think he's
such a good actor.
Yeah, he's amazing in everything. So, you know, we've got that going for us. But I think he also has that kind of... He doesn't get to do it often. But every now and then, and I really noticed it a lot in American Fiction, just because the type of movie that is, where he's presented with something inexplicable, and he just kind of has this fantastic, are you kidding me look. and I think, you know, traveling with the Doctor, it would get well used.
Yeah.
Well, and he would definitely have to be paired with one of the goofier Doctors, because he's mm-hmm. so serious.
Yeah.
I think that would kind of be the key to the whole thing, really. Yeah. You know who else would make an interesting companion? It's Colin Baker.
You think?
I think.
Hmm. Okay.
Have him take on the Evelyn role.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. I think Taika Waititi would be a great
companion.
I wouldn't want to see him as the Doctor, but as a companion, he would be fantastic. No,
absolutely.
Now, do you cast Taika as a real person, or do you put him as the voice of a robot or a rock monster or a...
It doesn't matter.
Oh,
even as himself, he's hilarious.
He could be like a chameleon type robot. Like he could be the next chameleon. And that voice coming out of Chameleon's face, that'd be hilarious.
But you know, he'd have to be against the more serious Doctor. He'd have to be the opposite of Jeffrey Wright's Doctor. A very serious, more Peter Capaldi type Doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes, please. That was the best thing about that most recent episode of What If that we watched. Oh, it's Korg again.
More, please. Thank you.
Yes, yes, bring me all of this and put it in my eye holes. I need it.
If it's back around to me, I think a companion that I would like to see is Alice Levine. This probably falls into the Rod Stewart category because I can't think of anything that she's actually performed or acted in, but she is a television presenter, and she has been a voice actor on some radio stuff. She was the co-presenter on My Dad Wrote a Porno podcast that I think just ended last year, or was it 2 years ago? And I think she's just got sort of the look and presentation, maybe kind of a Clara Oswald or a, maybe a better written Clara Oswald, or even maybe kind of a, well, not a Bill Potts, but who else would she, be similar to? Maybe Martha Jones type, but I could see her as a companion of the Doctor.
That's not someone I'm familiar with.
She's very Brit-centric. Although my dad wrote a porno was, I think, kind of caught on over here for a while. Sean, you got another companion?
Yes, but I didn't write him down, and I should have. Oh, bother. It's right there on the tip of my tongue. No, I do not have another companion.
You know, I thought of another good doctor. I think Cillian Murphy would make a good doctor. Again, it would be more on the serious side.
Ooh.
But yeah, he's kind of got a look and presentation that I could think could pull off a different kind of doctor, but also kind of bring sort of that gravitas to the role as well. Again, another probably... pipe dream on that one, since he's become so acclaimed now and probably going to take home an Oscar.
I don't know. John Hurt.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Didn't see that one coming.
That's true. That's true. Although Hurt hadn't done anything for a while. Hurt's one of those old school actors, one of old school British actors. You know what I mean? Those guys that it's not above or below them to do television. It's not above or below them to do radio or stage or TV. I mean, it's just he's cut from that same cloth as I think Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen and Judy Dench. Just some of those actors that they do it for the love of acting. So I think that's why it was probably easier to get John Hurt.
You could be right. You could be right. If he was still alive, Bob Hoskins.
As a companion? Yeah.
As a companion.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? That's an inspired pick there, because I think Bob Hoskins could pull off that companion role where the companion is there to basically ask the questions. But I think Hoskins could pull it off in a certain way where it wouldn't seem like that kind of dumbing down the companion in order to convey to the audience, you know, what is happening. Because I think that in a way he could take it to sort of another level of asking the questions, but kind of in a cynical more type way, that the delivery would make it more interesting of how he's asking the questions or asking why something is happening. And then also maybe kind of being a bit dumbfounded by the answer as well. I think that might be kind of fun.
Yeah. He's definitely, obviously you look at Roger Rabbit, but you could even look at,
well, I think Mario and Super Mario Brothers is a prime example of the type of companion that he would play.
Or even, I don't know if you guys remember his role in Beyond the Sea.
Oh, yeah. 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 There you go.
The way he portrayed there would be, really good.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. All right. Well, I think we've come to the end of our, mostly to the end of our list. Did anybody else have that one last one they wanted to get in there before we wrap up?
Ben Affleck.
No, no.
He can do anything. He's the shark in Jaws.
No. No.
The only other one I had was Nico Parker. She is the daughter in The Last of Us. And she's been in a couple other things. I think she would probably be a good realistic choice as a future companion because she's not really done a whole lot yet, but has kind of that future in front of her, and she's Thandi Newton's daughter.
Ooh, how about Thandi Newton?
I had her as a potential as a doctor.
Yeah, she'd be a great doctor.
I don't know any of these people.
You'd know Thandi Newton if you saw her.
What
up? She was also in Solo.
She's the one that fell off the train.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
The madam in Westworld. She's probably best known for Mission Impossible 2.
I could see that.
I think she's probably best known for Westworld at this point.
Well, at this point.
I could see that, yeah.
Nico Parker was also in Dumbo. I didn't see that one, but she's going to be Astrid in the live action How to Train Your Dragon. So she's kind of an up and coming actress.
They're doing a live action How You Train Your Dragon.
Apparently.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, Universal's building a whole new theme park land around it. So I guess we need a new movie to keep it relevant. Now, you said she's the daughter in Last of Us?
Yeah, of
Oh, at Joel's, the very beginning.
In the very, very beginning.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She's not done much, but what I saw of her in that alone was, yeah, she's good. She'd be a good companion. I mean, it's kind of, the companion's one of those roles that you can kind of, it's a blanket you can do whatever you want with, and I think she's a not well enough known actor that you can literally do whatever you want with that role. Has the chaps that she can do, pull off whatever you ask of her.
I also think that sometimes we cast these companions based on companions that have come before, but I think sometimes it might be fun to bring somebody in and take them in a whole different direction. I think that the Hoskins, that's why I think Hoskins is so inspired, yeah. Because I think that takes the companion in such a different direction and realm that we haven't seen before. I think that the companion could be anybody, and I think almost without cookie cuttering that, you know, position in the TARDIS, I think it's, I mean, look at Donna Noble. She was also another companion that I think went a complete different direction than we had ever seen with a companion. And I think that's why she, you know, so many people ended up falling in love with her. It was so different. I think you could almost slot anybody into that role if you took them in took a different approach to it and didn't make it, you know, kind of that standard, you know, questioning the doctor about everything and very, you know, but really dumbing down that character sometimes, which I don't think they always do. And I think in Modern Who, they've done a better job of not doing that. They didn't always do it in Classic Who. I'll defend Classic Who too, but a lot of times they fell into that trap. And I think that some of even the modern companions have fallen into that trap. So going a different direction with a companion, I think is important.
Yeah, that's, you put a good actor or actress in that role, and it all comes down to the writing. However you write for that character is going to really showcase those skills and give you something different than what you've had before.
Yeah.
Okay, Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Yeah.
That'd be all right with that.
That's the thing. That's what makes the companions so kind of almost easier to cast than the doctor is, because you just choose a good actor and you write the character based around that, or vice versa. You write a good character and then find the actor that easily slots into that role. It's so interchangeable that it's not, there's almost less pressure to choose a companion because you can make them whatever you want.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
That's true.
They could be the complete opposite of what you expect to see on screen, and it could work. It doesn't matter. It can come from any walk of life. It can be an alien. It can be absolutely anything. Where the doctor is a little bit more structured as to what they need to be and what characteristics they need to have.
This is absolutely true, because the companion. I mean, heck, you could make it the yappy dog from the Looney Tunes. Yeah, Spike, you wants we should go and do the thing. You could give that personality to a companion. I don't know if they'd last longer than a season. But the doctor, on the other hand, you kind of have to play by a few more rules.
Yeah. Well,
guys, this has been rather enlightening.
A lot of fun. Kind of fun to talk about what ifs.
Hello, fellow time travelers, and welcome to the Doctor Who Target Book Club podcast, the only podcast to discuss, in story order, all the Doctor Who novelizations. My name is Tony Whitt, and every 2 weeks or so, I'm joined by a 2 to 3 person discussion panel, including our so-called expert who's been a Who fan since 1979. That would be me. We also get the views of intermediate, casual, and novice fans who either have never seen the show or who have never read these books until these podcasts, including
Dalton Hughes
and
Allison Fitz-Seyfried.
You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts, or even ones like ours. You're listening to Traveling the Vortex, a Direction Point podcast.
You are invited on an adventure across all of time and space, in a completely random order. It's the Police Box in the Junkyard podcast. Jump in the TARDIS with your hosts,
Eric Gulbranson,
Asad Heshki,
and
Matthew Kressel.
Explore Doctor Who TV stories, audio adventures, and books, both novels and non-fiction. The Police Box in the Junkyard podcast. It's the entire Whoniverse. On Shuffle. The Police Box in the Junkyard podcast is a member of the Direction Point Network and is available about once a month wherever you find your podcasts. You are listening to Traveling the Vortex.
Hi, I'm Rupert Booth.
I am known as Paul Ferry.
And my name is Barry Williams.
Together, we host Time Ram.
Time Ram's a cruel mistress.
It's a random number generator.
That also.
We roll a number from 1 to 30, and that's our doctor. Then 1 to 300 for the story, and then we ram them together.
Even if it doesn't make sense.
Cruel, I tell you.
Time Ram, putting the wrong doctors in the wrong stories, so you don't have to.
You're listening to Travelling the Vortex.
Sean, what do we got coming up on the schedule?
Well, we return to some reviews, some Big Finish coming up. Santarans versus Rutans, The Children of the Future. This is the second story in the box set, and we will be covering that next. And then we have an adversary archive on the Axos, and we will talk about the Feast of Axos and the Golden Ones. Both of those, one of those, the first one is a Big Finish audio, the second is a comic. That would be interesting to try and listen to that one. I'm glad I caught that. which I might even go back and rewatch Claws of Axos.
Just I was because
it's
doing
been
the same
so long.
Me too, yeah.
I need a refresher on that one.
Might be a Friday night.
You know what? Speaking of, we hope everybody who did join in had fun. and then another Santarn versus Rutan with Born to Die, the third series in that special box. And then what's this? More Season 6B? Why, yes. Yes, it is. We'll tackle a couple of Big Finish short stories. With a short trips, and then what is this? A Stain of Red in the Sand. Ooh, good title. which is an audio drama from the Short Trips, Volume 1, if I'm reading this correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You'll have to pardon me if I'm fumbling through this. My allergies are so bad, my eyes are down to two very narrow slits, and I can't see anything.
Oh,
if you
exciting.
Could have put this in Braille for me, Glenn, that would have been much more helpful.
Exciting stuff coming up, nonetheless. You can find all this information on our website, travelingthevortex.com. If you get any value out of the podcast, why not put some value back into it? You can do that by becoming a patron of the podcast. Click on the Patreon link, support us there. When you become a patron of the podcast, you unlock more audios and specials from us. Also, please consider giving us a 5-star review wherever you subscribe to this podcast. And of course, you can find us on the various social medias, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and Tumblr. Anything else before we close this one? If not, until next time, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Are you sure? Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.
Direction point! Direction point!
A Doctor Who podcast network.